All right, you guys can head back to your seats. All right. Boom. There it goes. That's good to see everybody. Today is our first Sunday in December, and that's good news because I feel like I can celebrate Christmas now. We busted out the Christmas song. I almost wore like a Christmas shirt. Not the sweater. I know some of you were hoping I'd wear that Christmas sweater I wore at our tacky sweater party last year. That won't be seen this year. That's for the good of everybody. But, you know, some stores and stuff, you notice, you know, it's kind of the Christmas creep. It kind of creeps earlier and earlier in the year. I know, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, all that stuff happens in November. And that's supposed to give us reason to celebrate in Christmas early. I don't really get into that, though. I'm more of a December kind of Christmas guy. And I certainly can't get into some stores have their Christmas decorations for sale as early as like October, like before Halloween. And I'm like, man, it's not Christmas yet. But now it's December, so I'm saying. And so I sent out a message and I asked you, what are your frustrations at Christmas? Those of you who are on the text message list got that. And some of you responded. A few people said, frustrated because of money. And it can be, right? You got all these gifts you're trying to buy for everybody. And some people said, you know, just living up to the expectations of my kids' friends and what they expect to get, from their friends. And there's a lot of frustrations. I'm going to share one of mine, and it's one that's shared with a lot of you, that Jesus kind of gets cheated out of Christmas. It's his own birthday party. I can't imagine me throwing a birthday party for my daughter, Abby, inviting a bunch of friends over and us giving gifts to each other and talking and singing and having a good time together, and nobody ever says anything to Abby. Unfortunately, that's what happens to Jesus a lot of times at his own birthday. So I'm with you on that one. Oh, and while I'm venting, I'll just tell you another thing I'm frustrated with. I'm frustrated that we know kind of the basic story of Christmas, right? We know Jesus is born in Bethlehem, Mary and Joseph, shepherds, wise men. But I think we're missing a lot of the story. In fact, there's a radio host named Paul Harvey, and he used to do a bit that he called The Rest of the Story. He would take people's lives that everyone knew and stories that people knew, but then he would give the rest of the story. And he would never tell you who it was he was talking about, and then he would reveal who it was. And that always made the part that you already knew more meaningful, more special, more powerful. And that's the way I think it is with Christmas. We know part of the story, but today and over the next few weeks, I want to go back and look at the rest of the story. I want to talk about the untold story of Christmas, the part that maybe gets overlooked, or, as is the case a lot in our culture, we glamorize a lot of the Christmas story. And we don't really think too much about, you know, somebody traveling while they're pregnant and traveling, you know, a week's worth of ride or walk and then giving birth in a stable. You know, we don't really think about that too much. But today we're going to start off, we're going to talk about Joseph. And I love Joseph because he is just intriguing. It's an intriguing character from the Bible. If you're reading the Bible for the first time, and I grew up in church, and so I heard bits of stories. And so then when I read through the Bible, I'm putting together some of these stories. Well, when you read about Joseph, he seems like he's going to be this incredible character in the Bible. I mean, some of the things that we know about Joseph, the Bible calls him a just man. It says that God sends angels to him three different times. I mean, just within a couple chapters, three times an angel appears to Joseph. This guy is obviously going to be a main character in the New Testament. I mean, as soon as you start the New Testament, it's all about Joseph. He's obedient to God's commands each time. Whatever God tells him to do, he does it. He takes Jesus to the temple for his circumcision. He brings him back at the Passover. He's this religious, devout, committed person. He loves the Lord. And you think, surely Joseph is going to have this major role. And then, that's it. In fact, the last time we hear from Joseph is when he brings Jesus at 12 to the temple. And they're there for the Passover. And Jesus, you know, the story, his parent, Joseph and Mary, they leave. They think he's with the family. And they realize after they get a day away, oh, wait, where's our kid? And so they turn around, they go to find him. I'm sure Mary's going berserk. Don't ever do this to me again. And he just says, didn't you know I must be? And she actually, Mary says, your father and I have been looking for you. And Jesus just very humbly corrects her. And he says, didn't you know I must be about my father's business? But this time, he uses father with a capital F, talking about God the Father. And then we never hear from Joseph. That's all. I mean, three times angels are coming to him in the first couple chapters of the New Testament, and then never again. We don't ever hear from him. Why is he gone? Why is he absent? Have you ever wondered that? I mean, that's some of the things that really intrigue me about Joseph. Some people say that some sects of Christianity would say that Joseph lived on and to be over 100 years old, and they've made him into a saint, and they would say, you know, he was a good follower. But I'm just telling you, if my son is doing miracles or my stepson is doing miracles, I'm going to be there. If my stepson is being crucified on a cross, my wife won't be there standing alone. There's something else going on. That's why most people who study the Bible believe that Joseph probably died between when Jesus was 12 there at the Passover and when Jesus was 30 when he was baptized and started his public ministry. And that seems to be the case. That seems to be why. Remember in John chapter 19, Jesus is being crucified and he says to John, John, behold thy mother, like you take care of her. Because a widow had to be taken care of by the son. Now her son has been crucified and he's telling John, it's your responsibility to take care of Mary. So there's a lot of things that lead us to that opinion, but what I want us to get from Joseph's story is this. He's a leader, but he's an out-of-control leader. And that just does not make sense to us, because a leader is supposed to be in control, right? If you're the boss, you're supposed to have a handle. If you're the husband, you're supposed to have a handle. You're supposed to be in control. If you're a parent, you're supposed to be in control. If you're the dad, you're the leader. But in Joseph, we have an out-of-control leader. And by that, I mean he's not in control of anything. And you know what the truth is? That's who we are. We may think we're in control of stuff, but ultimately, we can find ourselves just like Joseph and not be in control of anything. But here's the good news, and that's the bottom line for today. When you control nothing, God controls everything. When you control nothing, God controls everything. And that's what Joseph found to be true in his life. Because Joseph's life was going great before Mary. She messed it all up. Joseph, here's some things about Joseph. Joseph is from David's line. In the Bible, there are two different accounts of the genealogy of Jesus that lead to Jesus. One of them is Joseph's and one of them is Mary's. You can tell the one that's Joseph's because it says that his father, let me get his name, Jacob, that Jacob begat Joseph. That means he was his biological father. And in Luke, it says that Joseph was the son of Heli, which means it could be his son-in-law. And so what we have is two different ones. They both lead to David, but Joseph's line in Matthew, it's the throne line. It's the one that leads to Solomon and then David. In other words, if they were going to start a new kingdom of Israel, they were going to establish a king, Joseph would be a candidate. And just by being in that line, Joseph sets himself up for a lot of opportunities that he wouldn't normally have. He has like unearned respect because he's from David's family. He's from Solomon's family. He's in the king line. And so he's got some opportunities. Another thing, he's engaged. You remember when you were engaged, how excited you were, how good life was? You're looking forward to the future, right? I mean, life was good, but it's about to get even better when you get married. You know what Proverbs says in chapter 18, verse 22? It says, whoso findeth a wife, findeth a good thing, and obtaineth favor from the Lord. Man, Joseph is engaged to a virtuous woman, to Mary, a woman who loves the Lord. And so life is good. Another thing about him, just like we learned a couple weeks ago, when a man was espoused, when he was engaged, he was going to get married, he typically went and he prepared a house. He was building a house for his new family. So he's thinking about the future. He's going to start a family. He has a good reputation. We mentioned that he's called a just man. In Proverbs 22:1, it says, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches. Man, Joseph's got it going. He's got respect. He's got a family. He's got everything that every Jewish boy wanted. His life is going great. And then comes Jesus. It's interesting, because usually we picture the story going something a little bit different. Like, you know, life is really bad, in comes Jesus, and everything is rosy and peachy. But for Joseph, life was going pretty good. And in came Jesus, and then there came some problems. Now, I just want to give you a reality check. If you're a new believer in Jesus, just know problems are going to come. You've got a brand new enemy who hates you and wants to destroy you. His name is Satan. And you got your flesh, you got the world. They're all fighting against you. And there's also just going to be some difficulties with yourself trying to live this new life. Anyway, Joseph is the character we're going to look at today. He's out of control. So I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 1, verse 18. If you didn't bring a Bible with you, as usual, there's some underneath the chairs. You can grab that. Matthew is the first book in the New Testament. And Matthew chapter 1 is where we're introduced to Joseph. Verse 18 says, "Now the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise. When as his mother Mary was espoused to Joseph," they weren't married yet, they're engaged, "before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Ghost." The first thing that Joseph finds out is, you cannot control people. You know, an out-of-control person, the first thing you can realize is, you can't control people. Maybe you've gotten married and you've realized, I can't control this other person. I can complain. I can tell them what's wrong, but I can't control them. Have you ever been there? Do you know the answer? Probably everybody's in the room going, should I raise my hand? I don't know. If you're married, you know what I'm talking about. You know, if you have a kid, you know what I'm talking about. That kid gets to be a toddler, and you realize, I cannot control this kid. I can lay down the rules. I can punish. I can reward. But ultimately, he's going to make a decision on whether he's going to obey or not. I can't help him make wise decisions. Maybe you have a teenager and you're learning, I cannot control this teenager. I can tell them what's right. I try my best to raise them. They're going to make their decisions. You may have a boss that you can't control. You may have a coworker. You may have a teacher or students. All of us learn you can't control people. And Joseph learns that because his fiance, who he's espoused to marry, he's made a covenant that they're going to get married. He's building their house. She's pregnant. And it's not his. Just for a second. We know the rest of the story, but pretend like you don't. You've made a promise that you're going to love and take care of this woman. You're going out, you're building a house, your futures, you're thinking about it every day, and all of a sudden she's pregnant, and you know it's not yours. What do you feel like? Feel angry? And here's the catch. It doesn't say that Mary came and told Joseph, hey, the angel told me I'm going to get pregnant. It says that Mary was found with child. You know what that means? Her belly started to look like mine. And somebody said, what's going on with that? She was found with child. It's not like she even came and told him. They just found out. That's not rare in that culture, by the way. I know here we're engaged and people are dating all the time. They're talking and they're spending hours together and they're talking on the phone and texting. That really didn't happen in that culture. But he finds out at the end. Now I've got a video I want to show you. It's of this movie called The Nativity Story, of what Joseph's reaction might have been like. You can go ahead and hit that.
Do you know the reason you're Joseph? I believed in a woman of great virtue. I have lived my life seeking honor. Honor. Mary, so how am I to answer this? If I claim this child is in hell, it would be lying. You would have broken the law laid down by God.
I would never ask.
Joseph, this child is not mine. You will ask what I have to do. And if I kiss you,
there is a will for this child, greater than my fear of what they may do.
I
Don't make no accusation. Without that, there can be no trial.
You have shown great mercy, Joseph. For that, I will be thankful.
I don't know if you could imagine that hurt and betrayal that Joseph must have felt. He's realizing he can't control people. All his life's going well, and then things start falling apart. And that's where we find Joseph. But let's check out his reaction. Verse 19 of Matthew 1. Read that with me. It says, "Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man and not willing to make her a public example, was minded to put her away privily." What that means is Joseph could have accused her in front of everyone and said, "This woman is pregnant and it's not my child." And they would have picked up stones and they would have thrown it at Mary until she was dead. But he was a just man. And we use the word just to mean justice in the sense of people getting what they deserve. Just in the Bible really has the opposite connotation of, it talks about giving justice to the widows and giving justice to the fatherless and the poor. It means helping them. It means he was kind. And it explains it by saying he didn't want to make her a public example. He didn't want her to be stoned. He said he decided to put her away privately. That's what privily means. So he's going to put her away privately and just kind of sweep it under the rug. And I love that about Joseph. He's feeling no love, but he's giving grace. That's a tremendous example. But let's read the next verse. Verse 20 says, "But while he thought on these things," because that's what Joseph's doing. He's just running through his mind over and over. Why did she do this? What did I do wrong? Why? I thought I could trust her. What about my future? What's going to happen? It says, "While he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared in him in a dream, saying, Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take him to be married." You know what the real issue was? It was fear. Joseph was afraid. That's what happens when you start getting out of control. When you realize you can't control people, you start getting worried. You start getting afraid of what's going to happen. What are people going to say? What am I going to do in the future? Am I going to try and get married again? Am I going to covenant with some other woman? What's going to happen to me? And Joseph's worried about these. The angel says, "Fear not to take unto thee Mary thy wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. And she shall bring forth a son, thou shalt call his name Jesus, and he shall save his people from their sin." He's commanding him. The angel is saying, one, you're going to marry Mary. Two, you're going to be a father to Jesus. You're the one who's going to name him. You call him. Thou shalt call his name Jesus. You're to have a role in this life. Now, I know we kind of think about that. It's not that big of a deal, right? But can you imagine trying to be a father to God? Can you imagine trying to train up a child who's going to know more than you? Can you imagine trying to teach a child who's all powerful? I mean, you've got an impossible job. What are you going to teach him? How are you going to help him? You know what? How is he going to respect you when he knows everything about you? Some of you have stepped in as a stepfather, getting married, and you've taken on children that aren't yours, and you've been a father to them. That's what Joseph's doing, except maybe even harder, he's doing it with the Son of God. But check out where he goes with it. Verse 22 says, "Now all this was done that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet." Do you know, long before Mary was ever found with child, God knew what was going to happen. In fact, it was God's design. And I know it's hard for us. We are bombarded with this idea of, if you love Jesus, then he's going to make everything nice and rosy. And if you don't, he's going to make your life miserable. But that's not the Bible truth. God allows suffering in our life. And it's part of his design. And his design was that Joseph would feel betrayed and that Joseph would have to step out and do something that he had built this reputation of being a just man, and now everybody's going to think he's a chump. Did you hear what he believed? Mary told him God made her pregnant. And he believed it. He's going to marry her. He's in for a rough life, right? And he's making a big decision here, but God had it orchestrated. He had it all under control. The last verse says that Joseph knew her not till she had brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus. I want you to see something about this. He did everything that God wanted him to do. He married Mary. He called Jesus, Jesus. He's going to be in his life. He's going to be the stepfather. And I want you to see that you can't control people. The only person that you can control is you. And you do that by being obedient to what God's told you to do, regardless of what anybody else does. Listen, in our society, everything's kind of based on, if other people treat me right, then I obey. But with God, it's you obey whether or not everything's going your way or not. And when you do, God will bless you for it. He always blesses obedience. And it's not easy, but he will always bless obedience. We're going to hit these next ones a little bit faster because I got two more things I want to show you. He's out of control. And for this next one, I'm going to get you to leave something in Matthew chapter 1 and turn to Luke chapter 2. This is part of the classic story that people will usually read about Jesus' birth at Christmas. In fact, if you don't do that already, I encourage you at Christmas, give Jesus some time at his own party and take out God's word, read Luke chapter 2 and read about how they traveled to Bethlehem and the shepherds came, and that'll be a great thing for your family to see you focusing on Jesus during that. Luke chapter 2, we'll start in verse 1. It says, "It came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria, and all went to be taxed, everyone to his own city." Here we see that Joseph, the next thing he can't control is provision. That means he can't provide. I don't know if you've ever been in that situation. As a husband, as a father, you're supposed to be the provider, right? Well, Joseph, he's taking on a new kid. He's about to get married. He's building a house. Major expenses coming up, right? And then on top of it, the government says, "Hey, it's time to give us a slice of the pie. Everybody's going to be taxed." That's just what you're hoping for, right? When you get married, you're thinking, "I got lots of money. Yeah, I'm looking for somebody to give to. How about the government? That'd be a great way to spend my money." Well, that's what he does. And what makes it even better, he doesn't just have to pay money. First, he has to go on a long journey to pay money to the government. It says in verse 4, "And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea and to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child." Okay, so things are a little bit worse than just paying the money. He's got to travel to Bethlehem because that's the city of David, his ancestor. He's got to go back to that city to pay his taxes. Well, you know what's great? He's taken this long journey. It takes a man 4 days to walk to Bethlehem from Nazareth. When you have a pregnant woman, it's going to take longer. Because some of you, you're now dads, and you know a pregnant wife has to use the bathroom all the time, every 30 minutes. It's worse than, you know, elderly people. I mean, it's just all the time. So I'm sure there were lots of pit stops along the way, but they would say that it probably took them about a week to go. So a week-long journey to go pay, and she is mega pregnant. I mean, she is ready to go. I'm sure that was a real comfortable ride for Mary, and I'm sure it was a great, encouraging time for Joseph as well. Let's look at verse 6. "And so it was, while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered, and she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes," it's all good, "and laid him in a manger," because there was no room for them in the inn. Are you kidding me? So you take it, I mean, just think through the logistics of this story. You've got a pregnant wife, you're going on a long journey. Then you're in a strange place you're not used to being, and she says, "It's time." And so you're thinking, "Okay, I'm the provider. I'm going to go to this inn. I'm going to get us a room." And guess what? There's no room at the inn. The best you can come up with as the provider is a stable. And you didn't provide a crib for your son, a manger, a trough. See, Joseph doesn't have any control over what he can provide. Listen, it doesn't mean he doesn't try, but ultimately you have to realize when you're not in control of anything, God is in control of everything. And he may think it's strange that he has. God, why in the world are you making me leave? My wife's about to be pregnant. I don't have any money. And now I've got to go to Bethlehem. I got to pay taxes. And what's going on? I thought this is what you wanted me to do. I'm doing what you told me to do, and things are getting tougher. Are you even there? But no, all along, God had it planned out. The verse is up on the screen. It's Isaiah chapter 7. Whoops, I'm in the wrong place. Sorry. Where's my verse? Micah chapter 5 and verse 2. It's up on the screen. It says, Behold, thou Bethlehem Ephratah, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall he come forth unto me that is to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth have been from old, from everlasting. He's saying it's not just like a king normal, somebody from everlasting. He's talking about the Messiah is going to be born in Bethlehem. Hundreds of years before Jesus is born, God had a plan, and he moved Joseph to Bethlehem so he could be born in the city where he was to be born. See, God had it all under control. The whole, was it the way that Joseph would have selected? Would he have chosen that for his wife and for the new child? No. Was it easy? No. Was it God's design? Absolutely. You got to realize, you may lose a job. You may get your hours cut. That happens to us all the time, right? We live in that world. You may get hurt. You may get injured. And you can't provide for your family, or you can't provide for yourself like you want to, like you feel like God wants you to. But just realize, when you're in control of nothing, God is in control of everything. That's what Joseph is learning. So again, we learn, just submit to what God has for you. Don't fight and kick and fuss the whole way. Know that he's in control. The last thing is back in Matthew chapter 2. So you can flip over that way if you left something in your Bible, in Matthew chapter 2. This picks up where the wise men left. And just for those of you who love to see this kind of stuff and study it and make sense of it all, the wise men, when they come, Jesus isn't in the stable anymore. He's not in a manger. It says that they're in a house. But they're still in Bethlehem, but now they're in a house. This is sometime after he was born. We don't know exactly how long that is. But it says in verse 13, when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise, and take the young child and his mother and flee into Egypt, and be thou there until I bring thee word. For Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. Things just keep, you know, we like for stories to get better, but things keep getting worse for Joseph. He not only can he not control people, and he can't control provision, he also cannot control protection. Because as the dad, as the man of the house, you're supposed to be able to protect your family. But I got news, you can't. You can pack your house full of ammunition and guns. You can have knives strapped on you at all time. You can have an alarm system. You can go through everything you want. But you can't prevent a child from getting hurt. You can't guarantee that your child's going to go to school and not be a victim in a shooting. You can't guarantee. You can put all the safeguards you want in place, but you can't guarantee that some predator is going to grab your child. You can't make sure, you can't know for sure that you can protect your wife at home from somebody who's crazy and busting in your house and going to kill you. There's nothing you can do. You know who's in control, though? God is. And Joseph comes to this reality of, oh, and by the way, if that's not, you know, you just had a baby, you got a newborn. All right, great. What do you want to do? Well, let's flee into Egypt. How about a nice trip through the desert? That'd be fantastic. Right? That's not good. That's bad. Not only are we leaving the place, they don't even speak my language over there. I'm fleeing to a place I can't speak the language. I don't have any money. And I'm taking my family somewhere, and a king is trying to kill us. Things just keep getting worse. And if that's not bad enough that he has to go there, he says, stay there until I bring thee word again. Don't we like to have like a time limit? Okay, how long do I have to stay there, God? Until I tell you. Oh, isn't that the worst? You know your kids, like, I want you to sit here. How long do I have to sit here? Until I tell you. Oh, ever since we were kids, we hated that. And that's where Joseph is. He's saying, how long am I going to be there? He says, until I bring thee word again. But check out the next verse, verse 14. It says, When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed into Egypt. He obeyed. Listen, in everything that we're seeing, Joseph can't control anything, but you know what he can't control? Himself. And he chooses to obey the Lord no matter what he says. And he says in verse 15, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled. You see this trend happening? All the bad things going on in Joseph's life, they're all fulfilling prophecy. That it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt I have called my son. Hosea chapter 11 and verse 1 is up on the screen. That's the prophecy that we have, where the Messiah is going to come out of Egypt. See, all along, as difficult as situations are, God's in control. And he's orchestrated events, and all you need to do is just obey. Trust God that he's in control of everything. That's the bottom line. When you're in control of nothing, God's in control of everything. So all you have to do is just obey. And I don't know what situations you have gone through or you're going through now. I don't know what situations you're going to face tomorrow. But I know this, God does. And he's in control of everything. And what he's asking you to do is the same thing he's asking Joseph to do. Just trust him and obey. That used to be an old hymn we used to sing when I was a kid. Trust and obey. There's no other way to be happy in Jesus than to trust and obey. You know, you think, how could you be happy when you're having to pay taxes, you're having to travel a long way, when your reputation may be shot, you're taking on a child, a stepson, and right when you're supposed to be getting married. You're having to flee into Egypt. People are trying to kill your son. How are you supposed to be happy? I don't know, there's just some kind of peace and joy that comes from obedience to God. Maybe you've experienced that. Maybe in tough times you've obeyed Jesus and you found it, that that is the best way to be happy. That brings a joy that you can't explain. I don't know what's going to happen in the next weeks leading up to Christmas. I do know this. During the holidays, in the month of December, is the highest rate of suicides in the world. You know why? The time that should be hope, there is no hope. But there's hope in Jesus. And you can know that he is in control of everything. Nothing has come into your life that he didn't see and that he didn't allow. And you can trust him. The Word of God says in Romans 8:28 that he's working all things for good. Even those things that look terrible. He did it in Joseph's life. He wants to do the same in yours if you'll let him.